and it's 6 o'clock, and I will start by the roll call. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you can say here, that would be great. Commissioner Ma?
Here.
Commissioner Mansfield? He's not here yet? Tony?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Commissioner Mercer?
Here.
Commissioner Fawn? I think you are on mute.
Here.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. So, welcome to the February 15th, 2022 Human Services Commission meeting. This evening's meeting and future meetings will be held remotely via Zoom. We have three sets of minutes to approve. And for each of them, if I can have a motion and a second by commissioners, that would be great. So let's start by the January 4th, 2022 minutes. Can I have a motion?
Motion to approve January 4th, 2022 minutes.
Judith Mercer, second.
Anybody needs to abstain? Okay, motion carried. So the second set of minutes is January 19th, 2022. If I can please have a motion.
Do we need a vote on it, or is it just, are we good? But otherwise, motion to approve.
Do we need a vote on it?
Yes.
Okay. Can I have a, everybody in favor say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Okay. So now we go to January 19th, 2022. If I can have a motion and a second.
Tim Ma, motion to approve January 19th, 2022 minutes.
Judith Mercer, second.
Anybody needs to abstain? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. And the last one is the February 1st, 2022 minutes. If I can have a motion.
I have to abstain on this one. I think so does Commissioner Ma.
There was no meeting, so I don't know, because there was no quorum
right. For
that day. Should we still approve it?
Tony, we still need to approve it, right?
That is what the minutes say, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. If we have I think everybody could acknowledge that whether they were there or not, that
right. It
is correct to say that we did not have a meeting.
The motion to approve February 1st, 2022 minutes. Tim Ma.
Second, Jude Mercer.
Thank you. Motion carried.
So we're a bunch of us sick. Well, that's probably not something you want in the public record, but.
No, I missed it. I'm sorry. Apologies again.
No problem. So regarding written communications, are there any written statements that were submitted for this meeting?
There were not, no.
Okay, thank you. Any communications from City Council, Community Council, Boards and Commissions?
Good evening, everybody. I hope everyone's feeling better if they were sick there previously. no real update for this meeting, but a couple of quick items. One, just FYI, was appointed by the mayor to the Eastside Human Services Forum. So just FYI on that, and I think that would be, in times, a great resource for the Human Service Commission here in Bellevue. The other item of note I wanted to update you on was that we did receive a great number of candidates for the open position on the Human Services Commission. some outstanding candidates. So look forward to the process there going forward, currently trying to winnow that down to a set number of group or a smaller group to interview in person or via Zoom. But that's where we're at right now, but looking forward to making an announcement on that shortly. As I've done previously, staff and the chair of the Human Services Commission will be involved in those interviews. So you should be getting a note on that shortly about your involvement as well. So that's it for me, unless there's any questions.
Are there any questions for Deputy Mayor? Okay, great. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Do we have any staff and commissioners report?
Vice Chair Samiri, I do have a few things to report. This is Tony Esparza. One, I wanted to update you all on our hiring process for the Human Services Manager position. We have successfully recruited and hired a fantastic candidate. Her name is Leslie Miller. She is currently the Human Services Supervisor in Kirkland, so very, very familiar with the East Side, the needs of Human Services on the East Side, and the providers, and the collaborative work that our cities do together. So we're excited to have her. She will be joining us on March 16th, just in time for the RFP and funding process. So we will be really glad to have her with us. I wanted to note, if you all have not had a chance to see it, on January 24th, Christy Sangland, our Human Services Planner, and Director Michael Shiasaki presented to the Council on the Human Services Needs Update. The information was similar to what was presented here, but there was some great conversation afterwards from the Council with staff, and Chair Piper also was a part of the presentation. Definitely important information for consideration for the Commission as we come up on the funding cycle, so if you have not had a chance to watch that, I would encourage you to do so. And then immediately following that presentation, the same evening, January 24th, there was a presentation providing the Council with recommendations on 1590 capital funding. So as you may recall, a little background, 1590 was a tax that was adopted by the City of Bellevue at the end of 2020. Revenues are estimated to likely be about $9 million a year, and they have those dollars have very specific guidelines for use. 60% to 100% needs to be for construction or preservation of affordable housing, behavioral health facilities for specific vulnerable populations and their ongoing operations. And then any remainder, but no more than 40%, can be used for behavioral health and housing-related services. So you may also recall that Council allocated $1.8 million of those revenues in 2021 to a behavioral health and housing-related services RFP. And so those services are still being provided in the community with those dollars. It provided for increased behavioral health, increased case management, and rental assistance funds. That was before we had the added ARPA dollars available to us. On January 24th, what went to Council was recommendations for capital use of those dollars. A separate RFP was issued for that. Staff brought a recommendation that funds be awarded to LifeWire for the relocation and expansion of their shelter services and emergency housing services. So that was approved by Council. Very, very exciting to have that go through. But similarly, the conversation afterwards, given that 1590 spans so many human services issues, brought up a number of really important topics for the Commission's consideration. And so again, I would encourage you, if you have not had a chance, to go back and watch that presentation as well. A couple other just small items. The remaining items in 2022 that were scheduled for an alternative day, the remaining meetings that were scheduled for an alternative day, have now been moved to Thursdays. And so you should have gotten those put on your calendar, but those dates are now July 7th and September 8th. So that happens on weeks where the Council cannot meet on a Monday and they shift to a Tuesday. And so we need an alternate day of the week, and we had discussed considering Thursdays as our alternate day instead of Wednesdays. And so that is what that is reflective of. And then one last item, just a reminder to commissioners, a member of our staff, you may have received an email from Andy Owry. She's looking to verify the serial numbers on your iPads so that we can keep track of those important assets for the city. So if you have not seen that email and have not replied, if you would not mind doing so. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony, and congratulations on the hiring. We look forward to meeting you soon. Okay, great. So would you please take the lead on introducing our panel, Tony?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So the commission has identified a list of panelists that they would like to hear from, and one of those was to hear from youth about human service needs in the community. So this evening we have four youth here with us from a variety of different leadership organizations on the East Side, specifically for youth leadership. So they have each agreed to come and speak with us from a broader perspective of what they observe our needs for their peers. So we did assure them we would not be asking them about their personal experiences or to share anything about their own personal human service needs. So they are minors, so we can keep that in mind and just keep our questions broad relative to what they're observing amongst their peers in their school or their community. So we'll start with introductions. So I'm going to encourage you, if you're one of our panelists, they do have some adults here as representatives of their organization as well, if you're comfortable to turn on your cameras. And let's start with the Bellevue School District Student Advisory Team. Tercet, do you want to start by introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name's Tercet Gisesi. I'm a junior at Bellevue High School, and I serve on the student advisory team for the district.
And then she has a staff member here with her from the district, and I apologize if I don't pronounce your name correctly, but is it Rehana? Did she
make it? Sorry, I was on mute. That's how you pronounce my name. And yes, Tercet serves on the Student Advisory Committee, and it's been a great pleasure to serve with her over the last couple of years.
Thank you for being here this evening. And then we have some representatives here from Latino Heat. Ace, would you like to start with introducing yourself?
I'm Ace, a freshman at Sananish High School.
Thank you for being here. And then I know there were possibly a couple of adults there with you, so I'll let you all introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Judith Mercado. I have the great pleasure and honor of serving our East Side students with Latino Heat as a family and youth support specialist for our Latino community. And I am here from East Side Services, and my colleague Tina shall be here on her way as well.
Thank you so much. And then we have two youth here from the Bellevue Youth Link program, along with technically, we have two staff members, but one of them is one of our commissioners. And so, Melissa, would you like to start with introducing yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Melissa. I'm a junior at Bellevue High School.
Thank you. And Mia?
Hi, I'm Mia, and I'm a sophomore at the Overlake School in Redmond.
Wonderful. And Patrick, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, good evening, everyone. So I'm Patrick Alina, the Youth and Program Coordinator. And I'm joining Mia and Melissa as part of our youth board members.
Thank you. And then, of course, we want to acknowledge Angela Fan is also a staff member for the Youth Link program, but is here as our most recent add to the Human Services Commission. So we let the youth and the adults know in advance of four questions that we were going to be asking them to hear more from their expertise and their viewpoint. So I'll start with one question and then go through all four youth and let them answer first. And then we'll just open it to any adult that wants to contribute. If you have something, feel free. If you don't, no pressure. I know these youth have a lot to say and might represent everything that needs to be said. So we do not have to hear from adults. We're happy to let the youth answer the questions. I thought we would rotate the order that I would ask the youth the question so people don't feel pressured. So for this first question, Melissa, if you would like to go first, and then Mia, and then Ace, and then Tercet, and then I'll change the order for the next time. So the first question is, what are the most significant human services needs that you observe are impacting youth in Bellevue? And Melissa, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sounds great. So definitely during the pandemic and after the pandemic, so many human services have become emphasized. And I think one critical one that I want to mention that is definitely likely the most prevalent is certainly mental health in youth. Mental health in youth is something that recently one of my teachers spoke about, and she said that she herself sees a visible increase, like a massive increase in youth reporting symptoms of anxiety and depression and things like that. And so it is clearly something that's like ever on the increase. And so kind of like on the other way of that, we've also kind of seen this larger increase in like acceptance towards mental health because it has become so much more common. From what I see within my school, so Bellevue High School, it is more common for students to express that they are feeling anxious or depressed and have that be like accepted and normalized, which in that sense is a great change. However, it still is very, very important to address those needs of students to make sure that they do overcome those mental challenges because it is so common right now. So for my school in particular, during the pandemic, there was an addition to the like counseling program, which was the addition of the MHAT program. So MHAT stands for Mental Health Assistance Team, and it's basically this team of school psychologists who now work for the district. And it's this very unique process. It's basically this free service that students who are struggling with their mental health can have access to talk with the school psychologist and for like short-term therapy, essentially. And so it used to be that only freshmen and sophomores could have access to it, but because it is so incredibly high in demand, they're now opening up for juniors to access it as well. And so currently there are like two people part of the mental health assistance team, but because they are continuously like finding new students who need support, they it is also very important for them to also add new members because, again, it's so like high in demand. And yeah, so that's one of the things I want to mention. One of the benefits of that program is that it's free. And so hopefully more mental health programs that can be enacted into schools do remain free. So that way all students can access it no matter what their background is in terms of like social status and things like that. So that's the first aspect of mental health that I want to touch on. The second thing that I wanted to touch on was this need for more guidance and like mentorship programs. And so due to the pandemic, something that I have been noticing in youth is that there are many youth who just feel very lost in school. I mean, there was a whole year that was virtual. And so because of that, it was like people kind of lost track of school and how the system works. And so because of that, people kind of came back into in-person school being like, okay, what do I need to do now? What am I supposed to work on? Kind of feeling like a fish in the sea and just very lost like that. And so I think that has really emphasized the need and the necessity for more like guidance and mentorship programs, because as of right now, school counselors, they do a lot. They make student schedules, control like courses, stuff like that. And so that added like need for them to also serve as like guidance counselors is something that has caused them to not really have time to pay attention to every single student. And that is, again, not necessarily their fault, because there should be more of them. And so that's why I think it's very important for there to be more specific like guidance counselors apart from school counselors to address that issue of students wanting more like assistance and guidance for school so they can make a plan for after high school, and they can feel a lot more like secure and more like supported throughout their journey. And yeah, so those two are things that I feel are very important. And if you have any questions, please let me know.
Thank you so much. Mia, would you like to provide a response to that question?
Yeah, I completely agree with Melissa. I think one of the greatest human service challenges that are facing Bellevue youth is mental health. And I had been reading the needs report directly about youth in Bellevue. And according to the report, the amount of youth across multiple grade levels who have contemplated suicide in the past 12 months has increased since 2016. And I think that this goes to show that it is a really relevant and increasingly difficult and important issue. However, also, I think it's really important to address the root causes that are associated with mental health, and then also how mental health relates to school performance and many other factors. Mental health is one of these topics and factors that is relevant and is factored in by so many different things, by students' families, by their economic position, just so many things. And so I think that as it becomes increasingly relevant and increasing, especially due to the isolation of the pandemic, which I think only furthered that increase. So I definitely agree with Melissa. I think that mental health is one of the most important service issues facing youth right now, only through the pandemic and post-pandemic.
Thank you, Mia. Ace?
I also agree with like mental health and all that stuff. A lot of teenagers that I know struggle through it and need help with it. And some also don't know what it is because of how they grew up, or they're a minority that like their parents say, or it doesn't exist. So one thing that I really want to push out is therapists that are color therapists that can help kids from their same background and like also understand from where they're coming from and how your household also impacts how your mental health is and like how school, all that pressure parents put into you, immigrant parents put into you, because they have a standard for you. It's like, we want you to do better than what we did, but at the same time, the school system is way different from here, from where you grew up. And so it's more viable and easy ways to get access to therapy. Not only mental health, also like drug and substance abuse. Because some people that I do know have struggled with that because of the pandemic, and it needed something to relieve themselves. And so it's like they didn't trust an adult to talk to, so they went to like drugs or alcohol, and it's sad because they can't trust an adult because of their background.
Thank you, Ace. Tercet?
Yeah, everyone on the panel said a lot of the things I wanted to say. I agree with all of them, especially Melissa emphasized on a point about career counselors who are there to kind of guide students. And I think that's really important because it takes off a lot of pressure off students who are, especially once you get to be like an upperclassman and you have to start deciding what courses, and like it actually starts to matter what classes you take and where you apply, and you kind of get into the real stuff. It's really important to have a guidance counselor there that you can talk to that will actually guide you through, okay, well, these should be your next steps, or have you considered these, and kind of, you know, educate you on your different options. I wanted to add on to what Ace said about students falling into bad circumstances because they feel like they just need to get away from school. And I think a really cool thing, I'm just speaking as a student, but a really cool thing that applies to youth is the amount of like extracurriculars that we get, like after school programs. A lot of people are involved in sports, and that's a healthy kind of getaway for them outside of school. And so I think sports and mental health are definitely on the top of the list. But I also wanted to mention food services. A lot of the students, especially over the pandemic, relied on school for food. And I think what I wanted to bring up was not only food access, but food quality. When I was getting ready for this meeting, I talked to a bunch of my friends, and they all generally said the same thing about cafeteria food needing to improve. And I think it's not just about taste at this point, but also like the healthy options, the vegan options, like the salad. It would be like an iceberg lettuce, which has like relatively no calories. And so I think we really need to start focusing on the kinds of food that people are eating, because if you're not going to go to the salad, you either have a hamburger, which, you know, or you have a pizza. And so there aren't that many healthy options. But yeah, those are just something. That's just something I wanted to bring up.
Thank you to all four of you. Okay, so for the next question, we'll rotate the order. So Mia, if you could go first, and then Ace, and then Tercet, and then Melissa, we'll have you go last this time. And so the second question is, what systemic inequities exist in human services in Bellevue? Mia?
All right. So regarding mental health and systemic inequities, like I mentioned, there's many factors that contribute to mental health depending on people's economic, familial backgrounds. However, something that I really want to address regarding school performance and the inequities there is I think really well represented by the graduation rates according to the NEEDS report, where the overall five-year graduation rate from the Bellevue High Schools in the district was 95%. However, for those who reported themselves as being homeless, that was 75%. And I think that this really points to inequities simply of background. It's not necessarily about one student's capabilities in an academic environment. There are many other factors that contribute to school performance. And I think that equitable access to programs to assist those in the situation is also difficult to come by. Many of my friends and the people that I know are not aware necessarily of all the services, the diverse and effective services that Bellevue offers, simply because either they just hadn't heard about them ever, or they didn't think that those types of things were available to help them. And that's very unfortunate, given that there are services to help them, specifically in mental health crises, or with food disparity, or whatever they could be suffering with. Not that all the services could necessarily solve every single problem that a student has, but knowing that there is people and programs that they have access to is really important. I think it's also important to acknowledge that youth specifically as a demographic has limitations to what they can do, especially given their mobility, given that many people that I know cannot drive, and given their familial situation, whether the parent supports them in going to a program or reaching out for help, may not be able to do so simply because they cannot get there or don't have the means to reach out for help. So I think that those are some really important systemic inequities. Another one that I was really interested in pointing to, I think Pierce brought it up, was food inequity, especially over the pandemic, where many students pre-pandemic and after rely on food and meals from the schools. And in the Bellevue School District, 2.9% of the currently enrolled population is Black. However, of the FRL and food price reduction programs in the cafeteria, they make up 69%, I believe. And that is an incredible inequity in how they are represented in the system. And I think it's important to acknowledge the inequities there. And as it's been shown in multiple data, not having just proper access to food and consistent, healthy, and nutritious meals also affects school performance that has nothing to do with a student's single academic ability. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Mia. Ace?
With systemic and how school systems are, from what I've noticed, a lot of people from Central and South America come into the school system, and from what I've seen, they're pushed into AP classes like AP Hug, and just because of the teacher's help, that's good, but if they don't have a good teacher to help them, they're most likely going to go to class because they don't know English that much or stuff like that. And that's one thing that I noticed, that are how the school system is, that they put in kids from different places into a class that they're not going to do that well. And there's only like teachers that can help and stuff like that. And then also it's like rents and how a lot of minorities go into places that are less income, because that's the only places they can afford, and how like some students depend on school food and how it isn't even the best, but it's one of the only options they have to eat. And more during the pandemic, there's a lot of programs from Bellevue that help out families with food, stuff like that. And I've seen by Jubilee Reach that Jubilee Reach helps with people with food and hands out food. And it's one thing that I'm grateful that they help out, but some people, some families that might be struggling with food don't know about that. And it's more about but we should be more helping with like food struggling, and not more specifically because a lot of people lost their jobs with the pandemic and stuff like that. But they couldn't pay rent for a lot of stuff, and they had to reach out to places to help them pay, or like the apartment complex had to wait because they knew how everything was and people lost jobs. And that's one thing that I noticed with the system around Bellevue. And another thing is that ethnic groups like Latin people, we should be more involved with the cops. Like I only know one cop, but that's the only cop I know. And it's better that I rather know one cop than none, but I rather get to know more cops, have a better connection with the Bellevue police force. And so I can actually have more adults that I can trust and ask for help if I'm in danger or something like that. Because a lot of teenagers do not trust adults, or just that barrier from talking to an adult, from talking to at all. It's something that should be broken, because teenagers can't do everything because mental health, but sometimes they don't know how to ask out for help or stuff like that.
Thank you, Ace. Tristan?
I don't really have an answer for this one, but I just wanted to emphasize the point that was previously made about mobility. I think that I think that for youth, a lot of the services, like when I first received this email, I didn't really know what human services were, right? It had to be broken down, and then I was like, okay, I know what that one is. And so I think if there was more advertising either in schools or after school programs or different events, for students to actually know what things were out there, because I'm sure there's a lot of funding going to something that students don't even know exists, but it's meant for students and for youth. And yeah, that and mobility, I think having services in places that youth are commonly found in, whether it be in parks or at schools or wherever youth are found in, would be more helpful than having them in a location that we then have to go search for and find, and if we don't have a vehicle, that would be challenging.
Thank you, Terset. Melissa?
Yeah, I really agree with all the points that were brought up by everybody else. I think one point that I wanted to briefly discuss was this aspect of Bellevue regarding the digital divide. So over the pandemic, so many things switched to become virtual, many more jobs and careers are virtual, and also a lot of human services, especially while we were in the pandemic, were provided virtually. And so according to certain data, there is this thing where people with disabilities have less access to technology than those who do not. And so this means that a lot of human services, a lot of careers, a lot of things like that, people with disabilities are less likely to have access to those because of that technological divide and because of that digital divide between the two. And so this means that people with disabilities are being further marginalized and further like pushed aside from things that could really help them and benefit them. And so to basically address this, I feel like there is a need for more programs within the city that will, I guess, assist people with disabilities on how to use certain technologies so that way they have that awareness, and also provide them with those technologies so that they can have access to certain human services that would need them. Because like for someone with disabilities, for example, it may be a more viable option for them to have a career that's more remote rather than in person. It really depends on the circumstances of each person. So if we give people with disabilities the resources they need to have access to a lot of a lot of human services, a lot of things like that, then that will greatly impact them. And I think that is something that is important to, I guess, discuss and like address when speaking of disparities that come with access and human services.
Thank you. So I'm going to pause. I realized that after question one, I forgot to invite the adults to contribute. So I'll open it up to the adults for question one and two. So question one was, the most significant human service needs impacting youth. And then question two was systemic inequities that exist in human services in Bellevue. And so in any of you, please feel free to join in from your perspective.
I agree with so much of what all the students relayed about the human services, you know, that are lacking, I mean, that are currently impacting, you know, our youth. And I definitely feel like mental health is at the top of that list. And just overall, I think access to services, you know, I think a lot of youth are not aware of the services that Bellevue has to offer. They're not aware of Bellevue School District services, you know, that we offer. So just finding a pathway to reach those students, I think, is a challenge, but I think it's something that's really important that we are mindful of, and that it is something that we're working towards.
Patrick or Judith, would you like to contribute? You can also say, are you upset at all? That's okay too, no pressure.
I just want to just quickly add, I think a lot of the things have been said, but one of the things that I want to provide specifically in conversation with the Bellevue School District Family Connection Center staff, the food insecurity, food and housing insecurity are really prime in the list, because it really meets all those lack of basic social services the students are not meeting right away. But I think also the career pathway or the post secondary track is also needing some assistance, because I think the offering of just sometimes college track and not emphasizing some other options like trade school or some of those things for students that are needing that as major, because there's a lot of disconnect for students that are not seeing themselves in the role of going to 4-year college right away or having even that option. I think that's one thing I just wanted to add.
Thank you, Patrick. And I see that Tina has joined us. So Tina, do you want to start with an introduction? And then if you and or Judith want to contribute, we'd love to hear from you as well.
Well, hello, everybody. Thank you. My name is Tina Morales, and I proudly work for Youthside Services and have the privilege and honor of working with Latino youth and families in a leadership, community service, and cultural empowerment group. And additionally, we provide comprehensive case management, crisis counseling, and information referral services, and do a lot of collaborations to ensure we're all talking to each other and creating opportunities. Thank you. I think just one, first I want to just thank you all for creating this youth panel, this opportunity for youth voice. And I think to transform our systems, we need to challenge ourselves to look at alternative ways of collaborating, bringing more resources so that youth and families can have a voice in how delivery of services is provided. And what we know works is being able to provide bilingual, bicultural services with the first and foremost action needing to develop trust. And so a lot of trust sometimes cannot be built when an online form needs to be filled out. It's built in safe spaces like this, and I'm grateful for the City of Bellevue support that we have here at Youthside Services. So it's built on creating safe spaces for families and youth to open up and genuinely share what's going on. And then from there, be able to rely on accessible services within the city. So to transform, you know, the institutions, we do have to get creative and look at alternative ways of solving problems. Institutionalized forms of challenges or inequality really require us to do, sometimes especially us providers working in communities of colors, to do twice the work, you know, and it's very possible, it just needs funding and resources. So thank you.
Former youth, growing up in the city of Bellevue, I actually went through K through 12th grade. And now as being a provider, I'm really honored to be serving in the community I grew up. So just creating that inspiration piece. There's a lot of inspiration with our adults surrounding us, and we need to be connected back to community because that's where we create inspiration, and our youth come back and serve our communities. They become police officers, they become nurses in our community, and they become providers in our community and city workers. So I just think relationships do matter, specifically knowing what everyone does and how we can all help each other. So that's my little 2 cents. And once again, thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, for this next question, we'll start with Ace and then go to Tercet, Melissa, and Mia. And so this question does blur a bit with the one before. So the question we just talked about was systemic inequities, and then this specifically asks about barriers that exist for youth. So what other barriers, besides any you might have already been able to discuss, exist for youth to access human services resources in Bellevue? How about for you, Ace?
I'm going to be honest, I think the biggest barrier that anyone can notice is the lack of trusted adults and also how the school provides mental health and all that stuff. The teaming book that I remember the first time I ever saw one or got one was when I talked to my school counselor about it. First time I ever saw one, never saw one before. And that's one thing that should be promoted more, of the hotlines that you can call when you're feeling down or something like that. It's more of people who you can talk and stuff like that. And also how they promote that stuff. It shouldn't be only like when you're talking to a counselor about your mental health that you should get one. It should be, even if you don't talk to them about regular stuff like, here, check this out if you ever want to or stuff like that. Because a lot of teenagers might want to see that, but they never got the chance because they never talked to their counselors about it, one, because they might not trust them or stuff like that. And that's one big barrier in my eyes, and that's the one that comes up to my mind right now.
Thank you, Ace. Tercet, how about for you?
Yeah, I think both of my points have already been touched on. One was awareness. It was just students knowing they have resources outside of the school. Like, we're all very familiar with the Bellevue School District. We're not so familiar with the Bellevue as the city. And so just having more awareness of what's available on days where there isn't school or something like that. And also mobility, having services provided at school or wherever youth are present, it would be very helpful, and also the timing. So if you have mental health services provided by the district coming in during fifth period, but you have an AP chemistry test fifth period, you I don't think you should have to choose between which one you go to. So I think adjusting for when services are being provided and where they're being provided is really essential.
Thank you so much. Melissa?
Yeah, so one barrier that I feel exists for youth with accessing human services resources in Bellevue, it's kind of more of an indirect one, but it's this idea that currently in the Bellevue School District, the majority of teachers are white. And so as of right now, 65% of Bellevue School District students are students of color. And so the reason why this poses as a challenge specifically for human services and the access to human services is because for students, I mean, we spent a majority of our day in school. And so we've developed some pretty strong bonds with our teachers. And so usually when we want to maybe go to them to ask about like a certain human services that a human specific human service that they would be in need of, then we tend to go to those teachers because we have that like bond with them. And the issue that exists right now is that because the teachers are predominantly white and the students are predominantly belong to various ethnicity groups, there's this inherent biases in them, it's called the stereotype threat. And it's this idea that a student of color in a classroom with a white teacher feels that that white teacher has this like preconceived notion of them and is therefore going to judge them differently or be more harsher with them. And that in the long run has been proven to actually hinder the performance of students. And so in that same way, if a student of color is sitting in a classroom with a white teacher, they will have this feeling that they will receive like judgment from that teacher and they cannot go to them when they have questions and when they want to receive like access to something that's so important. And so that inhibits their ability to go to their teacher and receive human service access from them. And so because of this right now, I think it's very essential for the Bellevue School District to hire more teachers of color so that way there is more of a balance between the percentage of students of color in the school and teachers of color. Like, for example, right now, 12% of Bellevue School District students are Hispanic or Latin American, but only 5% of teachers are. And so there really is a large disparity in that. And so, like I said, that can really hinder a student's ability to access resources that they will truly, really need. And so if we are to hire more teachers of color, then it will be a step towards helping students ensure access to resources that they are highly in need of. So, yeah.
Thank you. Tercet, I see your hand up. Did you want to join in on that conversation?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to just share my two cents about that issue. I think we need to stop looking at the disparities in different fields, like different areas, whether it's who receives food services or who's a teacher and who's not. And looking at those disparities as a negative thing, I think sometimes it's just what happens. And I actually think Bellevue does a really, at least Bellevue High School, does a really good job with affinity groups, making sure everyone has a place to go and everyone has a place to be. And a lot of the teachers have, like, they make sure that their students are comfortable. And I think one, this is off topic, so I'll wrap it up quickly, but one thing I've noticed personally was when I first came, I came back to Bellevue from South Africa, and I realized I was going to an international school there, which was filled with people from anywhere you can imagine, everywhere. And I came back to Bellevue, which had a very clear, there were Caucasians, there were Asians, and there were African Americans and Hispanics, and there were very clear differences. However, I really liked how Bellevue didn't put such a big emphasis on your race in a bad way. I think we definitely focus on inclusion and affinity groups. And it was to the point where I myself had to be like, okay, is it even this good to fixate on race? But for me personally, from my personal experience, I don't know if race has that big of an issue with it. I think if we do anything of like race being hindering students' access to human services, I think it's because students are told, like, look at your race and look at the people around you based on the color of their skin and how do you feel about it. And they're kind of pushed towards looking through that lens. And I think that might actually be the problem and not actually the people we're hiring or different things like that. But that's just my opinion.
Thanks, Tercet. Mia, how about for you?
Sorry, I think Ace is raising their hand, so I'll let them speak first.
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize. I missed that, Ace. Go for it. Thank you.
My two cents on this, it's more of, we shouldn't see teachers and stuff like that with, like, color and how you can trust them. But, like, for me, it's more, you tend to talk to more and get trusted more with people of your own race. And it isn't for, like, oh, you feel more safe. It's because, or at least personally, it's because they're going to understand more stuff like that. They're going to understand from, like, if you move, if you're immigrants, like, undocumented immigrants, a lot of them might need therapy. But the thing is, they do not know what that is because they never grew up with, like, mental health is real or stuff like that. Or their parents didn't know. But they still have that stuff inside and they need someone to talk to, but they don't know who to talk to. And the teachers, those teachers might not know what it is or might not know who to talk to about that, who to ask. And then it's more of another thing that I forgot to say is about money. because some people that do know about mental health and they need someone, they might think it costs money, but sometimes you can get it for free with the school, but they do not know how to. They still need to ask someone. It's always that barrier with people, with adults from your own race or from a different one. You still need someone to ask to. And a teenager might not have that connection with certain adults or even with the teachers that you might even trust. It's more about who do you feel safe with talking about, that you struggle with mental health. That's the truth that it comes out to. Who do you want to know? Who do you want to tell people about it? That's more of the truth.
Thanks for sharing that, Ace. Okay, Mia, I think we're to you. Go ahead.
All right. I really agree with what everybody said so far, especially around the lack of mobility for students. I think that there's a couple of things I want to talk about. So first thing I want to address, I slightly misspoke about the statistic earlier from the needs report. It wasn't that 69% of the students who are enrolled in the FRL program identify as Black. It's 69% of Black enrolled students are part of the FRL program. So I just wanted to clarify that, but still highlight the major discrepancy in representation there. All right, so a couple of things that I want to talk about. So I think one of the first ones that we've addressed a lot is the mobility, but to access services, but I also want to kind of relate it back to mental health. So as Tirsit mentioned way earlier in this meeting, is that extracurricular activities, especially sports and participation in that, has been proven to boost mental health. However, with that also comes a lack of mobility with access to extracurriculars, particularly in older youth, where lack of transportation, after school care, all of these things limit students' access not only to services, but extracurricular activities that they may find passion or interest in. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I really want to bring up is family and the impact of parents on students' access to services, especially mental health ones. As Melissa mentioned earlier, I think that here in Bellevue, there's been a lot of progress in the destigmatization of mental health, which I think is a great thing. But that doesn't mean that everybody and every single person or student's parents are completely in support of a student accessing mental health services, or they may not have the needs, the ability or in an economic position to buy a personal therapist, to pay a personal therapist for appointments consistently, or know where to access needs, just like the students themselves. So I think another thing that I want to bring up is I think it's really important not only to increase advertising and awareness for students themselves, but also for their parents. I think that especially if the it could be related to the school district or have an authoritative source reporting to parents the importance of mental health and the disparities in the community to increase awareness around that, I think would be really effective. In my personal experience with many of the friends that I've known, many of them have felt increased feelings of anxiety or depressive episodes, but they don't know what to do about it, especially if their parents would not be in support or even criticize them for reaching out for help, even if it could be seen as a sign of weakness. So that is something I also really wanted to highlight, was how families have an impact on youth, especially as teenagers and young students. Family is such a major part of your life and your environment. It's not something that you can also easily change or try and change yourself. So I just wanted to bring that up. And I think that's really important barriers to accessing services.
Thank you, Mia. How about for any of our adults, would any of you like to respond to that question? What other barriers exist for youth to access human services resources in Bellevue? Okay, maybe we got it covered. Great. Okay, so we're going to go to the last question. Tirsit, you're going to get to go first on this question, then Melissa, Mia, and Ace, we will wrap up with you before opening it back up to the adults one more time. So the last question is, what human service agencies are reliable, accessible, and equitable sources of support for Bellevue youth and their families?
I don't know if these specifically fall under human services, but I think our access to the public library is really, really valuable. I think because my school, at least, the library closes at 4 p.m., which is just an hour after school ends, and so you don't really have a lot of time. And if you don't have anywhere to go after 4 p.m., you don't get to do as much of your work as you would like. So I think it's really valuable that we have one that closes at 8 p.m. instead of 4 p.m. And I think although mobility might be limiting, I think a lot of that is due to the fact that people don't really know how to use it. Like, they don't understand which buses to get, how to, they don't know there's an app for it, you know, all of this stuff that they don't really know about. But I think for those who do know how to use it, it's really helpful that there are buses connecting. Like, there's a bus from my school to the library, and then I can take from my school and go to the Trans Center and catch another bus to go to Sammamish High School if I wanted to. And so I think for those who know how to use it, the bus system is always really reliable from my experience. Also, for an equitable one, I think Bellevue does a really good job, especially during the winter and the summer, with like those community events. Like, in the winter, they have the ice skating rink, and in the summers, they have those movie viewings. And I think that really develops a sense of community for you to like meet your friends out, or like your neighbors or anyone you want outside of school or outside of a planned event. I think it kind of gets the community together. And that's when I most feel like there is a Bellevue as a city instead of as a school district or, so I think those definitely are something I've noticed.
Thank you, Tirsit. How about for you, Melissa?
Yeah, sorry. So one, some specific human services agencies that I feel that are definitely really reliable and are really used within youth in Bellevue. I think number one, I would definitely say Youth-Side Services. I think outside of in-school mental health programs, outside of school agency that is very used among youth is definitely Youth-Side Services. And I think that's not only because they offer therapy options for various types of students, it's because they also are actively creating new like sub projects that are kind of different from therapy, but are intended to bring students from different backgrounds together to discuss and to really build that sense of community within them. I know that they currently have this all girls youth program, which I've seen like advertised in my school. So they are reaching out to students in our school to gain more like members from that, especially to find students who would really like benefit and need a program like that. So they know that they have access to it. And those programs tend to be all virtual and free, so it is very accessible for most people. And so, yeah, I think besides Youth-Side Services, I would say something else that I feel is very used in Bellevue, and I feel like it's also benefiting a lot of youth in a way, especially like a lot younger youth, is the Boys and Girls Club. So when I was in elementary and middle school, there would always be a lot, numerous students who would be attending the Boys and Girls Club after school. And so now I've heard some really interesting things. Like, for example, just a couple of months ago when we had that tragic incident in Odell Middle School where one of the students committed suicide, a lot of students from Odell Middle School came to the Boys and Girls Club afterwards, feeling very, you know, confused and really distressed from what happened. And so I heard that a lot of the Boys and Girls Club staff actually kind of walked them through the process of what happened and really kindly explained that to them and really took the time to really nurture them and develop them in that sense, so that they could come out of it with a more like nuanced understanding of society. And that's significantly important with youth development. I mean, being inside of a society that does educate them on important topics. That way they don't have to learn it on their own, and that they have someone else that will support them through it. I think that's brilliant. So I hope the Boys and Girls Club can even can put an even greater emphasis on hiring staff members that will take the time to nurture youth to make sure that they do have this comprehensive understanding of their city and their community. And so, yeah, those are two that I definitely feel are the most reliable and used right now for youth.
Thank you so much, Melissa. How about for you, Mia?
All right, so I think that this was touched on earlier by some of the other youth speakers for this question, but I think one of the services me and my friends appreciate the most is completely the parks and outdoor services, especially this summer. Coming out of COVID, I really did not have the opportunity to go anywhere, I think, like most people. And it didn't really feel safe, especially to me, to hang out with my friends that I could finally see in person indoors, especially in tighter spaces. It just did not feel right. So I spent most of my time, especially this summer, outdoors. And I am not the biggest outdoor person. I'll clarify that. But I felt like Bellevue does a really good job of providing safe community spaces for people to gather and interact outdoors, which is even more important, like I mentioned, coming out of a pandemic. So I think that certainly is one of the services and things me and my friends really appreciate the most, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, where we have so much beautiful outdoor space. So I think that for sure is one of the programs. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Mia. How about for you, Ace?
For me, there's a lot of programs. I'll say some. One, personally, is YES. One, because of therapy and also clubs that I've joined, been there for a while. And I'm going to name two. Latino Heat State is at YES during the weekend. And it's a good way to help also with students that need help with like college stuff and help them out the way. Because some of them don't even know how to fill out certain forms or stuff like that, or do a resume. And then also during the summer, I came to BCLAD, a LGBTQ safe place here, and it was welcoming. It was like there's a club that I can join during the summer. And then also another thing is Boys and Girls Club, the teen center. They have a lot of stuff. The staff, I've been there once. It's a welcoming place, stuff where a place that you can be yourself, hang out with friends. And then another one is Jubilee Reach. They also have helped with sports and during COVID, and even now they help with giving foods to family and stuff like that. And they help sometimes also with presents during like winter, during COVID, and gift cards to help them with stuff like that. So it's one thing that it's helping and stuff like that.
Thank you so much, Ace. And how about for, Tersit, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to really quickly, I thought I had to underscore what Mia said about the parks department. I think it's really, really, like, I grew to appreciate it, especially over quarantine when I wanted to just get out of the house and I could just take a walk. I live right by Larson Lake, and it was a very relaxing thing. And, you know, I think it's definitely one of the more equitable ones because you can walk there. You know, you don't have to have a car or anything. You don't have to pay for anything. And I think that was really nice. Also, I think our police force does a really good job in making sure our streets are safe. I don't think a lot of youth in Bellevue specifically, just in our city, have to worry about having unsafe encounters in the streets or have to have that worry as a big part in their lives. And I think that's really something we should highlight because it definitely would, it takes a load off that we don't have to also worry about, you know, being unsafe in our neighborhoods or in our communities, and that we can walk through the parks without feeling unsafe.
Thank you. So fun lesson, if everybody didn't know it, but human services in our city is in the same department as parks. So it's parks and community services. So our parks and community services department manages our outdoor spaces, both our developed parks and our trails, our recreation centers and programs, and then also an array of community services on the side of the house that includes both human services, our family, youth, and teens program, and also our adult probation program. So all integrated there. Adults that are here with our youth, would any of you like to add any closing thoughts or specifically in response to that last question of what human services agencies are reliable, accessible, and equitable sources of support for Bellevue youth and their families? Tina, I see you nodding. Would you like to chime in?
Well, thank you so much. Yes, thank you for the floor, and great to hear the responses from youth. You know, I want to say long time ago, the library used to have, the Lake Hills Library used to be open till midnight, you know, and it makes me think about how possibly we need to increase the number of spaces that are available during these time frames, you know, that are safe, you know, managed by, you know, professionals, you know, who have youth development focus. So, you know, I loved that the library was mentioned, and it reminded me that there used to be more spaces available for longer periods of time for youth, which leads me to kind of want to put on the table that it is my greatest hope that nonprofit organizations wouldn't need to compete with each other, and that there was a larger pool of resources so that we can have more and more opportunities for youth and families to thrive. And most specifically, those who are marginalized and have experienced historical trauma for which, you know, support is needed. But I'd like to see how there can be more opportunities for young people to apply to mini grants and make possible their own youth-centered, youth-driven ideas, and really would be an expression of what is on their mind and what is needed for the community. And I think lastly, I just would like to say, you know, there's a tremendous amount of creativity and innovation. If we continue to have more opportunities like this, and it's my hope that can be provided more often, and it inspires me to remember that there's actually a really great program that exists. It's the Well-Kept program, where there's a job opportunities. But I ask the question, how can that be expanded? How can there be more of that across the entire city of Bellevue? It's really well run, well experienced by youth who've been in it. But how can we increase those number of opportunities? I'd love to see just an expansion, if possible, so that there can be a multitude of innovative, youth-centered, trauma-informed approaches to supporting our community.
Thank you so much. Patrick, I see your hand.
Yeah, thank you, Tina. I just wanted to add also our third place is really the community centers. I mean, the libraries were mentioned, but I think a great deal of the students that we saw before pre-COVID were around the community centers, where they access not only like recreation, sports, and other activities, but really it's a point of them to gather and share with other families and youth alike. I mean, it's really a great place, so I really want to emphasize that resource. And we have great community centers throughout Bellevue.
Thank you, Patrick. Ace, I see your hand.
Yeah, not talking about community centers. I know there's one by Crossroads, and I don't know if it's open during COVID, because I mean, for there used to be pool, air hockey, and that's one of the places that I have a good memory of, because I used to go there after school with some of my friends since I've been in fifth grade because my cousin, he's older, he used to go there a lot. And so that's a place that I remember that also helped during like Thanksgiving, that made dinners, and also during Christmas gave out presents. And so that's one thing that I have a memory of, that there should be more places like that that help out, give food, or in general help out community to feed them, because sometimes some families can't afford a Thanksgiving dinner, but they can go over there and eat. They can have a Thanksgiving dinner and make more community, talk with people from different parts of Bellevue, and make a new community and make a new bond with the community you live in.
Thank you, Ace. Mia, I see your hand as well.
All right. So one of the things, kind of going off of what Tina said earlier, that I wanted to bring up was the youth involvement in community projects and collaboration there. One of my, sorry, that's my sister in the background. One of the things a couple months ago on the Bellevue Youth Link board that we had talked about with the Parks and Recreation Department was about the building of the trail connecting Kirkland and Bellevue along that old rail line. And one of the favorite suggestions that we had the most fun talking about that day was incorporating youth art into the trail, into the park there. And I think that when we were talking about community centers and community gathering places, I think that youth involvement, particularly youth art and creativity, because there's just so much of it here in Bellevue, would be a really, really cool thing to incorporate into services. I think that so many youth have so much passion for community and outreach and want to help others around them. But I think, like we discussed multiple times throughout this meeting, was that many youth, including me and my peers, have had trouble reaching out or knowing about services and opportunities that they had. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Thank you. Okay, Ace and Melissa, I see your hands. I'm going to let you each go one more time briefly, and then I want to turn it over to the commission to be able to ask you some questions. Okay, Ace, I think your hand was first.
That's a great idea. And that's, yeah, a lot of teenagers now, they communicate by art. And art has so many ways of showing, like music, cooking, painting. And like for me personally, one of the arts that I do is cooking. And having a place that teenagers can paint, do their artwork, show more of what they paint, that would make community around Bellevue and also within schools. And so that's a great idea, and I would love to help with that anyway and anyhow.
Thank you so much, Ace. Melissa, we'll wrap up with you.
Yeah, something that I just wanted to briefly mention was that yeah, this conversation of like public spaces that a lot of youth felt a connection to, it made me think of the Bellevue Botanical Gardens. I feel like for a lot of youth, sometimes I feel like it's almost kind of like a hidden treasure in the community for youth, the botanical gardens, because it is such a like a fascinating place. It's beautiful, but it also allows for people to become educated on nature and specific plants. And I feel like that's something that makes it very unique. And there's also a little cafe to go to if you just want to grab a bite. It has everything that a space like that would need. And I feel like more spaces like that, maybe more targeted towards youth, I feel like would be very in demand because like we all talked about, like a lot of youth do really want spaces to meet up with their friends. And there are a lot of those already. And I feel like kind of maybe incorporating similar elements that the botanical gardens has to maybe like an educational element where they can kind of like learn and become more engaged with like specific aspects of the community, like nature, and also things like cafes that maybe have that could maybe support like local businesses and things like that could be a really great way for youth to basically increase their engagement within the community while also having a space where they can meet new people and also just further have a great time within themselves. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. I want to take just a moment to thank our youth panelists who put in a lot of time preparing for our conversation this evening and attending after a long day at school. We appreciate that you're representing yourselves and your peers. So thanks for coming and talking with us. And in a minute, we'll see if the commission has any questions for you. But I also wanted to thank the adults from each of the representative organizations for helping me connect to youth so that we could have the youth voices in this room, and also for giving of your time this evening and for your expertise at all times in supporting the youth of our community. So with that, I will turn it back over to Vice Chair Mirfez and let you guide us through any questions.
Well, I just want to express my sincere thanks to each of the panelists. And this was immensely helpful and informative, at least to me. Your responses were so thoughtful, so I am appreciative. Just as a matter of my own perspective, I think our youth and seniors are underutilized in order to come up with solutions to the problems that we face as a community. And I would love a project where we can bring the youth and seniors together and see what happens next. So anyway, I am grateful for you, all of you being here this evening. So I turn it to our commissioners if they have any questions. Commissioner Ma?
Yeah, thanks, Chair Mirfez. So thank you all for giving us your thoughtful responses to the questions. And one thing that you guys brought up, everybody brought, was like accessibility to different services. And you said that was a barrier. How we do talk, the services that we fund, a lot of them fund navigators and outreach positions that specifically, especially for youth services, they go out and they try to go to where youth are. This is what they present to us. And for you guys, what would be the best place for them to be able to show you, like, hey, this is like outside of the school system. There's all these other services that the city of Bellevue funds. Like, would it be better if it was like on the school website? Would it be better if it was in one area that you could go to, versus like all the different organizations competing to try to reach out to youth kind of scattered throughout the city? So from your perspective as like youth, where do you think would be the best way to spread the message about all the services that we could probably communicate back to all the programs that we fund? Thank you.
I thought Ace and then Mia and then Tristan.
Okay. In my opinion, there is no easy way to share out. But one way to start is with the teen linked books, not just having them in the counseling area. But I remember at least for St. Amish, we had like a day, one period that we talked about mental health. That's a good way to hand out youth teen links, talk about, talk to a counselor at St. Amish or at your school that can help you get counseling from like YES or somewhere else. And it shouldn't be only when you reach out for help. It shouldn't be the only way you can get the help. It should be like, it should be able to give you the help even if you haven't reached out. It's more like for at the beginning of the school year, they should hand out teen link books at the front of the office and also flyers about that or stuff like that. That's one way that's going to be reached out, and also talk about more like the help, stuff like that, where you can reach it or who you can ask more specifically.
All right.
I think I was up next. I'd quickly like to apologize for my cat yowling in the background, if that comes through. Okay, so to answer the question, I have a couple of ideas. So something that my school does, which is a bit unique, well, since it's a private school, it's outside of the Bellevue School District, and it's also in Redmond, but something that my school does that I think is really effective that me and all my friends use is that the school assembles this document with links to opportunities, particularly summer opportunities they just came out with, but they usually come out with this format for multiple different things. So volunteering opportunities, services, all of these are on documents and lists that they email out and are on the website, easy to access. If it's like, if you're looking for it, if you have any idea, even if you have no idea, like, oh, I need to do my service hours, I don't know what to do, you'll find it because it's all on the website and sent out through emails. I think that for me, digital access is really important. I think that in-person presentations on what's available is also really effective, but also sort of further emphasized by digital access to look and find things afterwards that I think need to be easy to find that way. In terms of in-person locations for services, I couldn't really tell you. I think that it's, there's a lot of places that youth gather, and they're really diverse places depending on who goes there, where they are. So I think pinpointing that is less helpful than a digital format at the very least, but also reaching out to schools and having resources shared through the school to students, not only students, but also their parents, I think would be a helpful format to get that out there.
Am I next? Okay, so answering your question, I think it's like, if you think about where students are, right, we are at school for 8 hours every single workday, with the exception of Wednesdays, right? That's 8 hours of our day that we're spending in school. And let's say we spend, you know, like a couple hours out and then we go home, right? So the most effective way to reach out to youth would be through schools. That doesn't mean that the message of like who's providing these programs doesn't have to be the city. You know, you can still advertise on behalf of the city inside of the schools. Like, for example, the first time I heard of YES services was at the club fair. It was just being advertised like any other club, but it was very distinct that, oh, this is a city initiative. It's not really like an ASB club. It's just a city. It's like its own thing, you know? And so I think if you had next to it, like, youth transportation, and then you explained how Orca cards worked and how our bus systems worked, because like if someone's new, right, the first couple days of school is just sign up for an Orca card. If you don't know what an Orca card is, or you don't know how to use it, or you don't know the app that goes with it, that's not really helpful to you. And so just advertising like any other club through flyers or through club fairs, but making sure that it says it's on behalf of the city. Or you could go at the malls or at Starbucks's where students usually go during their days off or during lunches, and have like a table set up that says Bellevue for Youth or something like that that'll catch the eyes of youth, and that'll make them go, oh, what is that? And then, you know, they can actually just go and check it out. Or having QR codes in the libraries or on posters that people can scan. I think, like, for me personally, if a poster is filled with a bunch of words versus if it has a QR code, I'm going to go more towards the QR code just because I feel like it's just targeted more towards youth. And I think it just needs to be eye-catching to youth. Also, the final point, at least at Bellevue High School, we get principal updates every single Monday, just telling us what's happening in the school, what's happening, and just important information to know. And I think it would be really helpful if we had, like, during the first couple weeks especially, if it said something like, if students are looking for transportation and they had this, or if students are looking for a place to study outside of school and it had the different resources. So I think it would be very smart to use schools as a means of reaching youth, because that is where we spend a majority of our time.
Okay, I think I'm next, but just to, yeah, I completely agree with everything that the youth panelists mentioned. I think something that I wanted to like add on to more is that really that intersection between both having the services mentioned on the school website, but also being presented to students like in a classroom or like in person. And the thing is that with the website, it's a, for Bellevue High School, it is a relatively easy to use website. However, it's so rarely talked about that it's almost kind of like, it's almost like crazy to think about how rarely it is talked about, because I didn't even know that our school had this page in the website dedicated to job or like volunteering opportunities for students until maybe like 2 months ago. And so I feel like that's a really valuable resource for students who are just entering high school, so that way they can know that their school's website is a very good, like, accessible place to navigate whenever they have questions about school service or are interested in like learning more about it, because it does have a lot of information. So it's really just about like making sure that's like that students like know about this. And so one way to do this is by definitely having like more principal emails that are like centered more towards the website, or like provide direct links to that website, like Trista was mentioning. And also to kind of like pair with that, just more in-person presentations in general, maybe that can specify aspects of the Bellevue, for example, Bellevue High School website to students in person, so that way they can have like a good general idea of the subject while they are there and are paying attention. And if they are interested in learning more, that they also can go to that website later on their own time when they want to learn more information. So really having that pair to make sure that students hear about it from their emails, from in school, from staff, is a really great way to make sure that students are aware of these really valuable resources to them.
Vice Chair Marquez, if we could wrap up after we hear from, looks like Tina or Judith, because we do have another topic that we do need to accomplish tonight on the agenda.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much, Chairperson, for the question, and thank you, youth. And what I would say is cultural navigators or navigators are really, really critical. And it's key to be able to do the work in person, face-to-face, as much as possible, especially for folks and families who experience marginalization. What I would say is maybe transform the word competition to collaboration. And that's a beautiful thing. I want youth to know that there are multiple organizations there to support them. And so I think that's critical and genuinely exciting, to be honest. I would say in terms of competition, it's mostly to not have to compete and to have a larger pool of resources available so that there isn't competition, but rather a showcase of what is possible through services. To meet multiple communities and to meet a multicultural community that exists here in Bellevue.
I think we have a responsibility as adults to lead, for example, and I don't think the right term is competition, it's collaboration, because among themselves, they can collaborate to make their school a better place. They can collaborate with other schools to make a community, to have awareness. And we know, and it might be a very cheesy quote, but it takes a village to grow a community, to see our youth succeed. Therefore, I strongly believe it needs a little bit of magic of all of us. As earlier I said, inspiration is key. So I just wanted to add that, and thank you for your question.
But thank you again to all of our panelists and everyone who took the time to speak and join us this evening. Many, many thanks to Tony for organizing this panel. It was extremely informative. Thank you again.
And our panelists, you're welcome to stay for the remainder of our conversation if you would like to, but please do not feel obligated. We know you've already given as much of your evening, so you're invited, but no one will think anything of it if you slowly disappear off the screen either. So feel free. Thank you again so much. And Vice Chair Merfez, would you like me to begin the next item?
Yes, please, if you can start the planning for the upcoming funding process.
Absolutely. So we have a couple of items to help us in our planning for the upcoming funding process, which is coming quite soon, as I'm sure you all know. One item in particular tonight, we have a due date of tomorrow, and totally understandable we needed to cancel the last meeting. We had hoped to be able to talk about it then, so we're in a little bit of a time crunch now. And that is our supplemental application. And so when we send out an RFP to the community and ask agencies to reply and apply for human services funding, it is through a common application process with all of the other shared cities. But each city can develop a document that talks specifically about some of their processes. And so that's something that we need to turn in tomorrow. And so one of the items that the commission has in the past contributed to that document is a list of funding priorities. So staff was actually going to come and speak with you, and we'll try to accomplish that this evening about two things. One, it is actually staff's recommendation that the commission not develop those funding priorities and put them in the supplemental application for a few reasons. As you all know, the City of Bellevue funds the continuum. And when those priorities have been named in the supplemental application before, it has caused some confusion amongst the human services agencies. While the commission has been clear during conversations that we will still accept applications across the continuum, it has made some agencies feel confused as if they should truly take the time to apply, and the application process can be quite burdensome for agencies. And so we, from the staff's perspective at least, our suggestion is that we not attach those funding priorities in the supplemental application. And then as a part two to that, as an alternative, staff drafted some ideas on equity principles that the commission could review and instead perhaps adopt and include in the supplemental application. And so I'm happy to review those with you. But wanted to pause first and just get the commission's perspective on the idea of not establishing funding priorities to put into the supplemental application.
I agree. I think it's a reason that's sound.
I agree with Tim. Yeah.
Any other commissioners have some insight or input on that topic?
I think I agree too. However, I think if we already have some priorities in mind, then I think we need to have an opportunity to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And so are you suggesting that the commission just discuss those and know those amongst themselves versus printing them in the application?
Correct.
Okay.
Based on the presentation that Christy did, mm-hmm. what was it, two meetings ago?
Mm-hmm.
And she asked the question, you know, how would your funding recommendations change based on this, her presentation? So I think a conversation would be helpful, at least to me.
Okay, helpful input. Thank you.
This is Commissioner Mercer. I agree with that. I think it's always better when we strategize a little bit beforehand to talk through like the funding priorities. And I think so much has changed, and there's so many things to discuss that having a discussion about them would be good. I also understand why trying to get out priorities by tomorrow and to do some signaling before we've had kind of adequate time to really kind of wrestle with it is probably wise. My question would be, how much do we think that our application, the folks that are putting in the application, like depend on those priorities? Have we ever gotten any feedback from them that, you know, one way or another, or is it?
The feedback we've mainly received is confusion.
They're more confusing than anything because we don't necessarily follow them.
Yes, in a lot of RFPs or calls for applications, when there are priorities stated, it tells you whether you should apply or not. And so agencies have been confused that we've listed priorities, but it doesn't still mean they shouldn't apply. And so it adds confusion to the process. And so I hear and understand and completely support the idea of the commission having this conversation amongst themselves. I think what I'm hearing is some openness to just not printing that in an application where there isn't really an opportunity to provide a full explanation.
Yes, then I'm supportive.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I actually support that being a standard practice. I do think that we can have a discussion among the commission ourselves in terms of planning purposes, but for it to be broadcast through the application as well, especially if it's not standard practice for as a priority, like compared to other RFPs, then I think that we can make it a standard practice not to post them into the future as well. That's just my opinion.
Okay. Okay, well, we can keep hearing more about that, but just for the sake of time, something different the staff were proposing was the adoption of some potential equity principles. And so just to get the conversation started, we drafted some. By all means, we would want the commission's feedback, potential editing, additions. If it fits the timing and we were able to get through these this evening, they could be included in the application or not, because they are also just valuable for the commission itself to perhaps have them as they review applications. And so I will bring up an example here so that maybe. I think I have too many things open. I apologize. So we drew this from both the needs update. We also drew it from past direction we've received from council around equity principles. And those are really the two primary places that we drew this information. So I'll kind of read through them and then open it up for conversation. And again, the intent of this would be that these would be the things that the commission would keep in mind when we are determining how to allocate funding. Unfortunately, as has been acknowledged multiple times tonight, there is always more demand than there are dollars. And so this would not prevent any agency from applying. It would more be used by the commission to guide recommendations. And so one of the things that was noted in the Human Services Needs Update is that there's inequitable access to services for residents of color. Another is that the data in the Human Services Needs Update shows the need for linguistically and culturally specific services. Which goes beyond an agency using a language line. Residents identified a need for agencies that are designed to address the specific linguistic and cultural needs of their community. I think we heard a little bit about that tonight as well. Council has expressed a desire to see funding extended to small agencies and or agencies that hold a specific expertise in serving a marginalized community. A term that the council has used a number of times has been trusted messengers. Number four, while the COVID-19 pandemic has had negative repercussions across the community, certain populations have been disproportionately impacted: residents of color, individuals with disabilities, and low-income individuals. And then a final one that staff had drafted was human service agencies are experiencing staffing shortages, increased operating costs, and increased demand for services. Adequate support for agency operating expenses is crucial to maintain the safety net of services in the community. So whether it is these or others that the commission would like to contribute to in a conversation, staff are recommending that the commission consider adopting a set of equity priorities to guide their deliberations through this next process. I welcome any thoughts, input, or questions.
Would this be posted with the application, or is this just for us?
I think that's an option either way. If it were to be posted in the application, we would have to adopt them tonight. And so the question might be answered based on our ability to do that this evening. I could see it being useful either way.
My only reservation right now is post, for reasons that I haven't really completely formulated, but I'm leaning towards not post, not including this with the supplementary application.
Okay.
But I have no problem with it as a use for us to use while deliberating funding decisions for the commission. I do need to formulate. There's a reasoning in my head. I just haven't formulated it yet, but that's
okay.
Just my first.
No problem.
I would agree with Tim, and I think maybe if what you had before with the supplemental application was confusing, this might be confusing also if it was posted. So I like the fact that we could use it as in the commission, but yeah, posting it and having it with the might be confusing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I agree with Commissioner Ma and Commissioner Fan.
This is June Mercer. Yeah, I do too.
Same here.
Okay. So that's everybody, yes? Did we miss hearing from anybody? So it sounds like we're in agreement of this could be developed amongst the commissioners for your own purposes. And so so then we would move on to the question, what are people's thoughts on this, the draft ideas? Are there elements of this that you would want to add to or have questions or concerns about? What would be input on that topic?
One thing that I'm just speaking and sharing my thoughts right now, but one thing that stood out to me from the youth voice, I think Terce had mentioned, was that focus on race all the time sometimes can be a detraction sometimes when trying to serve. It's just how you talk about it and how you speak about it, I think. And when we, I think that some of these equity principles are truly based on the needs update and things like that for marginalized groups. So, I guess I have nothing to add, but I just wanted to add that point that what Terce had said was, I think, something that resonates with what I've been thinking. But sorry, maybe that's just needless thinking, but I'm thinking out loud.
Sure, thank you. Definitely something to be considered, Commissioner Ma. When we drew these items, we tried to draw them directly from the data that had already been gathered and presented to the commission and council versus, you know, broader observations to make these very data specific. Anyone else have any thoughts or input? Okay. Is this something that you all would like to have more time to think about and come back and discuss again at our next meeting, where you could think about both what staff has presented in a draft and perhaps come back with any added thoughts that you might have, or is this something that you all would like to move forward with this evening? How would you like to proceed on this topic?
So I think I'd like to have some more discussion because it's interesting to draw up these equity principles, but we also operate from the standpoint that, you know, we try very hard not to disrupt, you know, existing sets of funding to, you know, places that are already getting things. And so I think to adopt sort of these pretty prescriptive equity priorities, then we would have to do a kind of an overhaul a little bit of like how we approach some of our funding from more of a ground up, which in the past sometimes is a little bit hard, right? If you try to cut, you know, funding from, you know, some big organization or whatever, there's friction or inertia that kind of stops that or speaks against that. So I mean, there's a, I think we need to talk a little bit more overall about how we're approaching funding before we could say whether we want to lock ourselves into a set of these priorities or principles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've raised a really good point that from my understanding is practice, but not necessarily policy or even protocol. But I agree with you that practice has been to start from a place of maintaining funding to prior funded agencies, not as a rule, but as a practice. And that has presented some challenges to introducing funding for new agencies. I think as we think about equity, as we think about the changing demographics of our community, the introduction of new communities that while we do strive to serve agencies that, of course, are inclusive of the entire community, that does not always mean that they have the trusted relationships or the cultural relationships to serve new and emerging members of our community. And so that can prevent us sometimes from supporting agencies that are responding to specific needs that are newly developed that didn't exist 10 years ago when certain members of our community also did not exist in the community. So I think you're raising an important question, Jude, and we would agree that that is a practice to be examined.
I agree with what Jude said in terms of looking at our overall plan for discussing funding before adopting or locking in these set of principles completely. That might basically what you said.
And I think an important part of it is also the issue of money, right? How much is going to be available for the next round? If it's going to be less, then the decisions are going to be even tougher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have finite resources. So, you know, how do we respond to the needs of diverse communities and at the same time don't cut drastically for the communities that we currently fund? So it goes, I think, hand in hand.
And I think in addition to that is that we also have received a lot of additional dollars over the last year and a half as COVID relief dollars. And so there's agencies that we haven't funded previously that are receiving funding. And my expectation would be we would have some of those come in. So I think that there's agencies that are receiving funding that will be applying but aren't currently in our general fund pot.
One thing I would recommend.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
One thing I recommend, though, is that if we are putting these priorities in, then I would also put in the priority that we take as just kind of common practice, which is that Bellevue funds serves the continuity,
the continuum.
Bellevue serves the continuum. Like, it would need to be listed there, too, because we can't just adopt these things and then say, Bellevue serves a continuum, but that's just unsaid. We already know that. I think it would have to be listed as well, because that really sets the rest of these equity principles as well. So if we did include these equity principles, I do think that you need to spell those things out as well.
Just point.
My 2 cents.
Yeah. Funding the continuum is a part of city policy. Excellent point. And just to clarify, staff is not recommending any principles be adopted that would change or override city policy by any means, but it's an excellent point to clarify that. Okay, well, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tony.
I was just going to say we will plan to bring this back for our next meeting. And I don't want to introduce any other topics, so I'll just name the topics and we won't begin a discussion on them, but they were included in your agenda memo, which we knew we likely would not have time to get to all of them tonight, paired with the youth panel. And so the supplemental application was one, which we've discussed, but the other one that we are suggesting that we bring back to the table next week or even I'm sorry, next month, or even the second meeting of next month, is we have a lot of new commissioners, potentially yet another one that will be joining the commission. So from our experience as staff, there's some kind of things that you all have made commitments to each other about before, but that aren't actually written or identified anywhere. They're kind of unwritten rules of how we do the review process and what the expectations are and kind of time commitments that are expected from various commissioners. And so we drafted some ideas of what we've come to learn that the commission invests into this process, and those ideas are in the agenda memo. And so our suggestion was just to have an open conversation about those as well. So for our new commissioners, as we head into the process, they don't feel caught off guard. They know how extensively you all invest into this process and what it takes to make it successful. So that was another topic around the funding process that we were hoping to discuss with you all that we can save for our next meeting.
I like that idea. I think last time there were some surprises, and yeah. I writing down some of the things that we kind of unofficially expect is a good idea.
Yeah. And so you'll see draft ideas for both of these, and they are intended just to be conversation starters, both on the equity principles and the I think we called them like mutual commitments or something. Again, those are intended for internal to the commission, just for you all to be able to discuss amongst yourselves, so you can reference those over the next few weeks before the next commission meeting. But I think that would be all from us this evening, Vice Chair Merfitt.
Thank you, Tony. So on old business, is there anything? New business? Nothing? Any other oral communication?
No.
Okay, then it's 7:50, and I call for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Great job running the first meeting, Samari.
Yeah, congrats on your first meeting.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.